You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Let's start what we have come into the room to do.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world, and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And you are joined today by myself, Jacob Andwafa, who is going to be one of your presenters today. And I'm very happy to be joined by...
Mary Merkinich.
All right. So before we announce what we have coming up on our program, I'd like to acknowledge that 3CR and Green Left recognise that this show is being broadcasted from the lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung, the original rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of the land. Australia was founded on the attempted genocide and dispossession of the First People, and we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. And then as socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all the First Peoples in their struggle for justice and the right to their land. So just to give a bit of a, we have quite a packed program today because, yeah, there's quite a lot of political developments, you know, we're trying to get our heads across. There's been quite a lot of political developments in terms of, you know, what is happening kind of internationally, which is what we're going to be kind of starting off with. We're starting a bit of discussion about talking about the Freedom for Tiller. And if we have some time, we might even talk about some of the recent actions of the Trump administration. But we're also going to be, our first interview will be with Rachel Evans, who is a Socialist Alliance member, but also a very active public housing activist in Gadigal land. And she's just recently written an article about the kind of different sort of you know, attacks on public housing that are currently happening in both New South Wales and Victoria. Then we're going to be interviewing. We're going to be interviewing Mitch from the Voice for Members CPSU ticket, which is a new rank and file ticket that is actually challenging the establishment leadership of the CPSU Victoria. So we're very keen to hear from Mitch, and then we're going to be. Then later interviewing Sam Brainwright, who is a disability support worker and former councillor at the City of Fremantle, and also the National Co-Convener of Socialist Alliance. So we're going to be interviewing Sam a bit about, you know, how the Labor government has just recently approved the Woodside gas.
The Woodside gas project.
Yeah, the Woodside gas project. And we're going to be really unpacking, you know, what is behind the ALP's kind of support for fossil fuels. So he'll be actually joining us from Canberra. That's what we got coming up for our program this week.
So that is a packed agenda.
Yeah. And I also want to kind of give a bit of a reminder to our listeners is that this month is actually going to be the Radiothon month. And 3CR is going to be, you know, all our programs are going to be raising money for the Radiothon, and we have a target of over 270,000 dollars, if I'm reading that correctly.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so, and our program, well, our program alone won't be running, won't be raising. Oh,
yeah, I just saw that's the target for the for 3CR. I thought meant that was our target.
No, it's not our target. all the different 3CR programs are going to be having different targets. And so I think I want everyone to kind of start thinking about, you know, the kind of importance of community radio, keeping it on the air. And so on. But yeah, Mary, did you have anything you wanted to kind of add about that?
Well, you know, when you listen to the other radio stations, as in the mainstream ones, you only get, mostly get a very jaundiced view of things that are going on and often very biased. So, supporting 3CR, you get alternative viewpoints. You get activists, local activists who speak on radio, and you get a much deeper understanding of issues that are going on. So I think 3CR is a gem and we need to support it. But sadly, the big end of town, of course, is not going to give us donations, and we need the listeners out there to help us.
All right. So the first kind of headline story I want to talk about is I want to talk about the sailing about the I want to talk about the Freedom Flotilla. So we've actually had an interview about the Freedom Flotilla at one of our previous 3CR programs, and so basically to give kind of a bit of an update, the Freedom Flotilla, which is basically a ship. That is loaded with aid supplies, etc., and it's basically part of, you know, the Palestine Solidarity Campaign's attempt to break the siege in Gaza. And there has been a number of issues with the disembarking of the first Freedom Flotilla.
Gesundheit.
Sorry,
Jacob just sneezed off air.
Yeah. So basically, the Freedom Flotilla has actually set sail, and the ship actually departed from the Italian port of Catania, carrying 12 people and essential supplies. These essential supplies include baby formula, diapers, and medical prosthetics. And of course, one of the things about this is that there is the very real risk of violence from Israel. Occupation forces. And of course, the crew includes climate justice activist Greta Thunberg.
No, Thunberg. It's a hard T. Europe doesn't have soft T's like we do.
Okay, yeah. It includes MEP, includes French MP Rima Hassan, who's part of the France Insoumise party, and they also have volunteers from Brazil, Germany, the Netherlands, Spain, Sweden, and Turkey. And they say that, you know, Hassan said that I'm aboard Madeleine because silence is not neutrality, it is complicity. And then the, you know, bringing up the real case that, you know, the Palestinian people in Gaza are being starved and slaughtered and the world watches. The ship is not just carrying aid, it is carrying a demand and the blockade and the genocide. One of the amazing things about this Freedom Flotilla is there's obviously been a lot of media around it. You know, one of the whole ideas about it is about bringing attention to the horrifying humanitarian situation in Gaza. You know, the act of genocide that is being committed by Israel. You know, because people, you know, what's happening is we're having the forced starvation of Palestinians in Gaza.
And we have only weasel words from our political leaders. No action at all while people are starving. It's totally outrageous. And that's why we have this Freedom Flotilla.
And one of the things as well is, in light of that, like, so basically there's this whole thing that Israel is trying to make this claim that the Madeleine, the Freedom Flotilla, has no right to enter. And
basically, it's in international waters.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a group of United Nations experts recently warned that any attempt by Israeli forces to block the Madeleine would violate long-recognized international law practice And they state, the people of Gaza have the right to receive aid through their own territorial waters, even under occupation, and the coalition ship has the right to free passage in international waters to reach the people of Gaza. And they wrote, as the Freedom Flotilla coalition ships approaches Palestinian territorial waters off Gaza, Israel must adhere to international law and comply with orders from the International Court of Justice to ensure unimpeded access to, for humanitarian aid. And despite, of course, this, there's it's kind of reported in the People's Dispatch that, you know, there's a lot of tangible risks that, Israel will ignore international law. And, of course, previous Freedom Flotilla missions have been met with repression, and there are concerns that the Madeleine may be targeted, as was the Conscience, which was another flotilla vessel hit by drones in early May. The coalition emphasised that the decision to launch Madeleine so soon after the attack on Conscience reflects both the urgency and the danger of the mission of this mission to break the siege on Gaza.
And but what they're trying to do to counteract that is by having constant contact with the flotilla and media tracking what's happening, so that the media can immediately report when the Zionist army tries to stop them or attack them, and they've already had reports of drones over the ship.
Yeah. And I think right now, in terms of the current up-to-date news, I think they're currently halfway. So they've almost reached Gaza. So, yeah, it actually remains to be seen. So I think what's going to happen next, in fact, there could be some big developments on this story over the weekend as they get closer to Gaza. And probably just a few things I would also note is I actually listened to a really good interview with correct pronunciation for it.
Greta Thunberg.
Greta
Thunberg. Yeah.
And it was the interview is available on Democracy Now. And it was actually a really good interview. And I think, you know, Greta, I think, made a lot of really kind of fantastic points. And because one point that really sort of struck me about Greta's interview is that she was sort of, because one of the things about Greta is that, you know, Greta is very well known for being the activist, the high school activist that kicked off the school strike for climate movement all over the world. And one of the things about that is sort of frequently asked is, you know, weren't you a climate activist and why are you standing up for Palestine now? And her kind of response to that is ultimately, you know, climate justice is a social justice issue and we cannot have climate justice while there's a population being systematically starved and under occupation.
Yeah, yeah. And I heard hers, I think it was a different interview, and her answer was similar, but she said something like, the reason that I became a climate activist is because I care about the planet and I care about people. What's the use of not caring about these people in Gaza? Because that's the whole basis of campaigning around the climate issue.
Yeah. And I've just also just got the latest news. So I've just checked the latest live updates on the Freedom Flotilla. So basically, this was kind of reported around 3 hours ago, but essentially the news report is that Israel is going to block the ship's arrival and get to basically prevent it from landing on Gaza. So that's possibly a better than Israel shooting the ship down
or killing people
as they've done in previous Freedom Flotilla.
Yeah.
So basically, it looks like that the ship might be turned back by Israel. So yeah, that's basically the latest kind of update on what's kind of happening. But yeah, I think
even that's an illegal action.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and I also think I want to kind of extend all the solidarity to, you know, to the people who are on the Madeleine, and that, you know, it is such an incredibly brave thing, I think, to do, especially in terms of the risks. Mm. And I also has to be pointed out that there were US Republican politicians who were making quite outrageous comments about, oh, well, I hope Greta Thunberg can swim. And the other one was there was quite a genocidal comment made by one of the Israeli politicians who basically openly called for the assassination of the people on the ship.
Oh, God, that's so outrageous. But it totally shows where they're at, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Hmm. All right, well, I'm going to go play a quick few announcements and we might get on to our first interview for the program. But yeah, just to get our listeners up to date, so we're just having a discussion about the Freedom Flotilla that is currently attempting to deliver life-saving aid to the people, to Palestinians within Gaza. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
People are where they are. You're going to have to meet them where they are. And you're going to have to be generous. And that's why it comes back to the idea of friendship. Friendship is never with people who are just like you. What a boring world it would be if you only made friends with people identical to yourself. You know, then again, you might as well have imaginary friends. You want to learn from people. You want to laugh with them. You want to laugh at their limitations. They laugh at your limitations. You grow together. Yeah? So politics is also like that. If you're just stagnant, you know, if somebody enters politics age 15 and when they are 35, the same person, terrible. They haven't grown, they haven't shaped themselves. I'm Vijay Prashad with 3CR. You better listen to it because it's really good.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're very happy to be joined today by public housing activist Rachel Evans, who is also a member of Socialist Alliance and part of Green, and also a writer for Green Left. So we have Rachel on the program to have a bit of a discussion about, you know, to give a bit of an update on, you know, the campaign to save public housing. Because currently, right now, in New South Wales and Victoria, there are a number of public housing estates that are being targeted for demolition. So, good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, team. How are you going?
Good morning, Rachel. Yep, we're great.
Good.
And, Rachel, to kind of start off, I guess I want to get a bit of a kind of background about, I guess, the nature of, I guess, of the housing crisis and what some of the current research says about the current waiting list for social housing or, in a sense, public housing.
Yeah, look, we are at an unprecedented housing crisis, and in New South Wales we've got 65,000 people on the waiting list, and it was only a few years ago, mid-COVID lockdown, that it was at 53,000, so it's climbing very fast. And the figures are 750,000 people need secure housing nationally. So this is a crisis, and the homelessness rates are also increasing rapidly, and housing emergency accommodation services aren't coping. So this is also partly that landlords have extreme power compared to tenants. So what happens in Sydney, which is the most expensive place to live, Gadigal, country Sydney, We had a rent rise of almost 200 a week last year, and landlords are just throwing out tenants every 2 years or as they want, and then bringing new tenants in at more expensive rates. So this whole process is sending people out to outlying suburban areas where they don't have a community, family, lacking services and so on. So it is breaking up communities, but it's just increasing the stress and anxiety of particularly young people. A third of households rent, so, and young people are looking at being renters for the rest of their lives. Now, the other thing that happens is it's about $2,000 to $5,000 that you have to spend on moving costs every time. So that's the other thing that renters are incurring, is this extra cost. So, yeah, this is the kind of picture of the crisis, and beautiful public housing would be a real solution, unlike the so-called solutions that the federal Labor Party and the state governments are implementing, which is basically a privatisation of public lands, this demolition proposals, which we've never seen the like here in Gadigal country. They've got six estates on their list, all in the outer ring, inner ring of Sydney. They've got Glebe, Waterloo, Mascot, South Eveleigh, Maroubra and Kingsford are all on the chopping block. And the two estates that we're defending at the moment, Glebe and Waterloo, South Waterloo, homes are being boarded up, which is the kind of pointy end of our campaign. People have been evicted and so on. So, yeah, we're really preparing for the barricade, so to speak.
Yeah. So can you tell us a bit more in detail about the attacks on public housing and the planned destruction of public housing by state governments, probably in both New South Wales and Victoria, and can you tell us a bit about the resistance to it?
Sure can. So, look, it's Victoria's part of this big build, which the Labor Party are attempting to demolish 44 public housing towers. So this announcement came about a year and a half ago and was a shock to us all the housing activists across the country. 44 public housing towers, that's 30,000 families and social units that would be evicted from mostly the inner city areas. So your North Melbourne tower was the one that they started to bring workers in a few days ago, and the Save Public Housing Collective, Socialist Alliance, Greens, community members, Vic Socialists, all these activists came in to defend, and you've had a postponement, so well done, you guys. And then in Sydney, we've got the 82 Wentworth Park Road, Glebe, which is opposite a homelessness community in Wentworth Park. It's very close to the city. There's an estate that we defended through an occupation a year and a half ago, and we staved off the demolition of this estate and for a year and a half, almost 2 years. The Labor Party, State Labor Party, got in just a little bit after our occupation and said that they weren't going to demolish it for the moment. But they then also told housing activists we couldn't go public with our victory because of experiencing domestic violence were allegedly being put in. So we took down the promotion of our victory, and now they're coming in, boarding it up, and we've got the next phase of the campaign ahead of us. So, yeah, and then in Waterloo South, Waterloo is the suburb in Australia with the most amount of public housing of any suburb, and it's a very beautiful suburb, very tranquil, heaps of green space. There's a lot of police repression and a number of Aboriginal families living in the public housing. But it is a really tight-knit community with a lot of services who come in every night with food. And so, they're wanting to demolish that. They have given 150 people eviction notices, and a number of tenants have taken the option of leaving, and the government is moving up apartments. So next, that's also a big focal point for us.
Yeah, and what can you tell us a bit about? So basically, I want to hear your kind of response to kind of counter the kind of Labor government sort of narrative around both of this, because The Labor government would argue that, you know, they're not destroying public housing. They're simply redeveloping these public housing estates. How would you kind of respond to that claim that the Labor government is making?
We shouldn't be demolishing homes, public homes, in a housing crisis. We shouldn't be demolishing for environmental reasons, but of course social reasons. These communities are very tight-knit, and actually there's a whole bunch of reports and evidence and experiences, particularly from France, where architects and builders have gone in to revamp and redevelop the housing, the public housing towers as they stand. And in fact, my uncle was part of an architectural firm that went into the North Melbourne towers to redevelop and beautify the public housing towers there. So actually they have been, like, there's been quite a lot of work done already, but the government actually just wants to use these buzzwords to go in and privatise public land. What they're doing is they're demolishing and then they're rebuilding and only introducing a slither of social housing into the mix. Now, social housing isn't public housing. It's owned and managed by private entities who call themselves not-for-profits, but the CEOs of these NGOs, not-for-profits, so-called, are on $300,000 a year, and it's 30% of your income on rent to live in social housing, not 25%, which is what we are charged in public housing across the country. So it's more expensive, and it's harder to get into if you're more disadvantaged. But they discriminate. These social housing providers discriminate a lot more consciously than the public housing waiting list. So yeah, that's a process. It's neoliberal capitalism. None of us are surprised, of course, but we have to resist tooth and nail.
Mary, do you have any sort of questions you want to ask?
Well, some of the questions were already answered, but the court decision about the houses that were being occupied in Lismore was a blow to those people. Could you perhaps talk a little bit about that, Rachel?
Yep, that's a really good question, and it's actually fairly inspiring. This is Pine Street, Lismore is a whole street of their public homes, because in 2022, when the floods destroyed large sections of Lismore, the government bought homes to lift them up to higher ground. That's what the government promised to do. And then the government left them empty. So people who were homeless went in and occupied them and turned this whole street to some homes. Oh. And it's been occupied for about 10 months. So, and then the government came and said, we're going to demolish 60 homes that they'd bought. Then the community resisted with rallies and so on. And then the bulldozers backed off. So they managed to demolish about 12 homes out of 60. And then the government took the Pine Street activists to court, to the Supreme Court, because the local police told the government that they weren't prepared to evict the formerly homeless people out of Pine Street. So then we lost the court case, but the government has not evicted everyone in Pine Street. The police haven't entered the street, and Pine Street organisers are opening up the street to bring people in and solidify the support within the community for the occupation. So actually very inspiring. And the other thing to note is that the police haven't evicted any of us when we've occupied public housing estates that we're defending here in Gadigal country. So it might be a thing. And the other thing is, the social solutions to the housing crisis is that the government should actually buy vacant homes. So the government argues there's a shortage of homes that have to build and get developers to build on public lands. But actually, there's a million homes vacant every night. So we say introduce a vacancy tax, stop with the negative gearing and the capital gains tax, stop with homeowners first buying grants, and just buy the vacant homes for the public purse and beautify it and build more public housing.
All right. Maybe we'll kind of wrap up this interview. Do you have any kind of like final comments, Rachel, and also how people can get involved in the campaigns to stop the destruction of public housing?
Yeah, look, Save Public Housing Collective in Victoria is doing a great job. That's the Save Barrack Beacon team, plus a whole bunch of community organising types. So just check the latest Green Left Out article about the housing campaign, and you'll also find some numbers, some phone numbers, myself here in Gadigal country, and then there's a few people in Melbourne that you can contact, and Andy George as well in Lismore. So it's not that hard to get involved, so please just give us a ring, and there's stuff popping off all the time. Yeah. Help us. So if you're a part of a union, get involved in the housing campaign too.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Rachel. And yeah, just sorry for listeners. Rachel sort of cut off slightly a few times there. But yeah, like just to summarise what kind of Rachel said, you know, people who are listening, you can get involved in public housing campaigns in Victoria by going following the Save Public Housing Instagram page. There's also you can also contact the local MP. Of Richmond, Gabrielle De Vitri, who's actually been very active in organising the picket lines for defending the public housing campaign. So, yeah, I'd like to thank Rachel again for being on our program, and all the solidarity with your struggles in New South Wales, and we're going to keep up the fight in Victoria here.
See you, Rachel.
Awesome. Go well, team. Bye.
Hi.
Ciao.
So we're just interviewing Rachel Evans, who is a public housing activist, talking about the ongoing campaigns to defend public housing, but also some of the issues associated with the housing crisis. So I thought I'd just go play a quick song. I was going to play Autumn Sweater by Yola Tengo for the next 5 minutes. And then, yeah, we'll go on to some more news before going into our next interview. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
Welcome back, listeners. This is 3CR Radio on 8:55 a.m. on your dial. And if you've just woken up and joined us, good morning. We're about to have a discussion on Trump's latest moves to free America of any coloured people, mostly.
Yeah, so I guess I want to kind of start off a bit of a discussion about what's kind of happening here. So this was a report in the People's Dispatch on June 3rd. But basically, the Trump administration has essentially set a quota for, you know, up to 3,000 immigration arrests per day. And one of the things about this is it's very much ramping up any kind of ramping up the detention of migrants in public spaces. Because one of the things about the United States is there's a large number of undocumented sort of undocumented
migrants
that, you know, come into the country for various reasons. Some of them have actually lived in the country for years. In fact, actually, I'll just give a bit of a plug. I mean, I think it's worth mentioning that there's a recent TV series in that's just been released on Netflix, which revolves around a Palestinian American called Mo, and the series is called Mo, and it very much kind of deals quite very closely with what is actually the experience of being an undocumented kind of migrant. What is it like to actually have no papers? But then in the case of a lot of migrants, especially Palestinians don't actually have any sort of citizenship in terms of their own homes, which makes the situation even more complicated. Like, for example, in the TV series, there's this whole issue of, well, if Mo gets caught out by ICE, what country do they actually deport him to? Because he doesn't actually have a home country.
So what do? They just lock him up for indefinitely.
Yeah, well, I mean, they'll be giving spoilers, but the series kind of explores right. All those kind of dynamics. But I just thought I'd just mention that because it's sort of like a good way of segueing into this. And basically, the Trump administration has basically, they've set a target of arresting 3,000 people. And of course, One of Trump's central campaign promises in 2024 was to conduct the largest mass deportation operation in US history. And he was vowing to expel between 15 to 20 million people. However, 5 months into Trump's second presidency, his administration has struggled to hit the necessary benchmarks, with deportation numbers largely the same as during Biden's last year in office. And according to a report published in March by TRAC Immigration, Trump's so-called daily removals have failed to even reach levels achieved by the previous administration, which, you know, what does that actually say about the Biden administration? Yeah.
Well, and there was never this kind of level or this level of discussion around deportations from the US under the Democrats under the Biden government. And so it's also showing how I'm lost for words, but how Biden's crimes, because that's how I see it, were covered up basically, and they're only sort of coming to light now.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things about it that's kind of important to point out is the nature of deportations that happen in the United States, they're actually considered perfectly legal operations by the United States government. So under the Biden administration, they're simply just treated as a legal matter, like something that, you know, this is what ICE is supposed to do. It's above government, it's above the state. The big difference about Trump is he essentially makes the mass deportations a big part of his own kind of political kind of practice. And I think he also uses a lot of kind of racism. Right, of course, it's still racist under Biden, but I think there's sort of like the kind of what you're getting with Trump is very much a mask off of American capitalism.
Before we go on, maybe we should just spell out what ICE stands for. Do you know what it stands for? Immigration something, I presume.
Yeah, what does it stand for? It stands for...
Oh, well, but okay, or maybe explain that it's...
Oh, it stands for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the body that goes around looking for so-called illegals and deporting them.
Yeah, that is basically the role it kind of plays. And it's it's pretty much very similar to the Border Force in Australia. And in fact, I mean, the Border Force... One of the interesting things is the Border Force, you know, has would love to play this role of being able to deport people in public, but under Australia, I mean, Australia's immigration laws are still terrible, but in Australia, it's probably much more difficult to deport someone in the public eye because they have to go through the whole court system, etc., to basically make sure that the deportation is
legal.
Yeah. And also probably the latest thing that's happened is they've just recently detained an 18-year-old high school student as part of these immigration raids. And I think, you know, one of the most positive things, and I want to kind of end it on this positive note, is there is starting to be organized resistance to these,
his school comrades rallied and demanded that he be released from detention. I think they've already staged two protests. But I just also want to say that this is the difference between our Border Force and this so-called ICE group, that they actually go out actively looking for people to arrest and deport. And I've seen pictures of where, you know, the gear that they're dressed up in is very intimidating. You're in public. This 18-year-old was actually driving some of his mates, I think, to a sporting ground, and then the car was stopped and surrounded by these agents with weapons. It's just something out of like the end of the world kind of movie.
Yeah. And I think, it's very much taking politics in America to kind of very kind of dystopian sort of levels. And I think, all the solidarity with left-wing activists who are kind of resisting this injustice that's happening right now under the Trump administration.
But it's not just left-wing activists. It's like, you know, this 18-year-old's high school colleagues that were rallying. And so local communities are beginning to stand up against this.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I'm just going to go play a quick few announcements. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
This June, we'll be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
I want to hear what you've got to say. I want to hear.
It's your station, your voice. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR Radiothon 2025. Your station, your voice.
What you've got to say, hey, hey, hey.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible. To donate, call 0394198377 or go online at 3cr.org.au. 3CR, your station, your voice.
Redline, the new show from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union.
So put down that job plan and listen to us.
6 p.m. every Monday night on 3CR Community Radio.
Choose to use your voice print to access your account when you call us.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're very happy to be joined today by Mitch Vanderwerth-Holman, who is the Assistant Secretary Candidate for the Voice for Members. So a Voice for Members is a rank and file ticket that is contesting the upcoming elections for the CPSU Victoria, which is the Community Sector and Public Sector Workers Union. So good morning, Mitch.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good here. So, Mitch, I guess I kind of want to start off because elections are actually going to be beginning next week. What can you tell us about the Voice for Members in ticket, and you know what is the kind of politics that you're trying to present in terms of the union?
All right, so there's two questions in there. The first is how did a Voice for Members come to be, and the second is what are our values and what are our politics, and I'll answer them both in order. So, to cover the first one, a Voice for Members is a group that came together out of three broadly shared negative experiences. The first was to do with our experience of the union as an organisation. Very many members did not know who their delegate was, who their organiser was, who their representative on the union's committee of management was. When they had tried to get in touch with the union to get something like a membership list, they had either been ignored, bobbed off, or did not know who to contact at all. There was this common experience that the union was not very organised. The second was with regard to the VPS EBA for 2024 to 2028. The common experience of members with that was that there was really no engagement with the membership on what we wanted in that EBA. There were some preliminary surveys for the log of claims, but there was no vote on the log of claims. There was no sophisticated attempt to understand what our priorities were in bargaining with government. And after a six-month negotiation period, it appeared to us that the government's initial offer was the one that the union accepted with very few changes. The third negative experience had to do with some campaigning that was taking place in late 2023 and 2024 with regards to Palestine. A number of union members active on that issue had tried to get in touch with the union's committee of management and had tried to get some emails from the union office. When they were unsuccessful, they used the government address book to get those emails and reached out to them directly. And when they did so, they were told by the union office that this was a breach of privacy. And in some cases, the union office reported to those people's employers that they had done this and claimed that this was a violation of the VPS code of conduct.
My God.
So there had been a wholly negative experience by a large range of members across these three fronts when it came to our union. Now, to answer the second question in there about the politics of a Voice for Members, we are a reform ticket and we're very proud of that fact. We think it is time for change. The current Secretary of the Union, Karen Batt, has been in that position for 32 years. That is, we've been joking, longer than both Hosni Mubarak of Egypt and Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. And quite frankly, it's too long for any person to be in a leadership position like that. So we are a reform ticket. We are proudly a democratic ticket. All of the members of our group, as it has come together and as it expanded, have had an opportunity to be involved, to have input into our policy platform, which was determined over the course of a six-hour debate on Easter Monday. All of our candidates went through a pre-selection process that was open and transparent in which anyone could nominate. That just about covers it.
Okay, so it's Mary here, Mitch. Good morning.
Hi, Mary.
Has there been a backlash from the leadership to the fact that this group is challenging them?
There sure has. When the government announced the Silver Review, we called a rally for the following week. It was going to be on Tuesday night outside of Parliament, Victorian Parliament, while Parliament was sitting. As soon as we did that, within hours, the union called its own rally, which was outside One Treasury Place for the Monday before our rally. Now, Treasury Place is where Cabinet meets. A Voice for Members promoted that rally. We tried to get as many union members to turn out to it as possible, because for better or worse, we are all part of the one union.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went, people who have been active in A Voice for Members and would be recognisable in our social media, they were actively scorned by officials of the CPSU and even officials of other unions. There were glares cast, people had their backs turned on. In some cases, people were approached and without their permission, their lanyards were grabbed to look at their name, or photos were taken of them. And that really was just the tip of the iceberg. Over the course of this campaign, we've seen some exceptionally dirty tactics from the incumbent leadership of the union. In one instance, an email was sent from an anonymous Gmail account which had the amusing title Ice Axe for Leon. That email was sent to all union officers in the corrections system. And it was an email that contained a series of slurs against both the campaign and our candidate for secretary, Giselle Hannah. And through some sophisticated internet sleuthing, we were able to figure out that that anonymous Gmail account belonged to a current employee of the union who has been a member of Tanbat's old guard for many, many years.
Yeah.
Intimidation. Sorry, Jacob. Intimidation and lies, basically. Recently there's been an announcement that there's going to be cuts to the public service. What is the Voice's position regarding these proposed cuts?
Oh, thank you. That's a brilliant question, Mary. Our position on these proposed cuts is that they're totally unnecessary. It's misguided austerity, and to make a strong argument against them, Voice of Members was very pleased to produce what we're playfully calling the Gold Review. Gold Review offers $13 billion in savings. That's four times what the government has found so far as part of the Silver Review, and it doesn't require a single VPS job cut. This is a sample of the kind of work that A Voice for Members hopes to do if we are elected. We're a sophisticated, slick, modern outfit, and we recognise that a modern public sector union needs to be active in the streets, part of traditional industrial activism, but also active in the spreadsheets as part of new, innovative public sector activism.
Great.
Yeah. So the kind of next question I wanted to kind of ask, actually I just want to make one kind of brief comment as well about the kind of repression from the established trade union sort of leadership and incumbents, is that, I mean, I've also kind of heard they've basically also tried to sort of contact particular sections of the membership, basically trying to, criticise, some of your members' association with particular left-wing kind of figures. And I think, I think that it's quite outrageous in a lot of ways. And also I think one of the things I'll have to say is, I mean, just looking at the ticket from afar, it is a very impressive put together rank and file ticket. Like, the fact that you have so many candidates indicates that majority of the positions indicates that there's actually quite a high level of support. But also I think, the fact that the leadership has been unchallenged for 35 years actually probably means that I think Voice for Members stands with a very good chance of actually winning quite a lot of positions. I guess I want to kind of hear, what are your comments on some of the lessons that this campaign has kind of brought for unionism, especially when you think about, put it in the broader context of, the decline of union politics? Because I guess the issues that that the CPSU face are not unique to the CPSU. In fact, there's a lot of, as someone who's a member of the United Workers Union, there's lots of challenges that unions have in terms of the lack of transparency, lack of democratic participation from members.
Thanks, Jacob. I want to respond to the first thing you spoke about first, and then I'll get to lessons for future rank and file campaigns. You are right. The incumbent leadership have words, A Voice for Members, as some kind of Trotskyite outfit. That is absolutely untrue. Our members and our candidates come from pretty much across the entire political spectrum. We are a broad-based movement, and we're focusing on the bread-and-butter issues of unionism that unite us rather than divide us. Karen Batt is a member of the Labor Party. Karen Batt's partner, Julian Keneally, who is employed as the union's communications director, is a member of the Labor Party. There are at least 12 staff members of the CPSU currently that are members of the Labor Party. Karen Back claims to be unaligned. That does not wash. And Karen has never been honest with members about this fact. So to respond to your second question about lessons for rank and file organising, I would say there are probably three that I would pick out. The first is that if you're going to do it, you have to have a broad-based appeal. We, a voice of members, we came together because of this common negative experience about the servicing and organising done by our union. That has a very, very broad-based appeal. The policy platform that we've developed speaks to those issues and what we do if elected to change them. That is quite a broad-based appeal. It is our view that mobilising on particular political issues in a union election campaign, particularly if that political issue is not a local one, is not a winning formula. Second lesson, I would say, is that you need to have an organised campaign executive or campaign steering committee or whatever other name that you would like to give it. There needs to be clearly defined functions within that campaign executive. So you need a person who's good at communications to handle your social media and your email. You need a person who's good at campaign fieldwork and organising to develop rosters, to develop maps. If you're going to do local work like leafletting outside buildings or door knocking home, someone good at spreadsheets is always a winner. If you're going to be contesting, for example, leadership positions like we are, secretary and assistant secretary, those positions should be reflected on your campaign executive or steering committee as the leader. You will probably need someone who is good with data. I just mentioned that as well, someone good with spreadsheets. So having a strong campaign steering committee or executive with clearly defined functions that meets on a regular basis. And the third one that I would add, I had it in my mind just a moment ago, but it has now escaped me. Oh, that's what it is. It was to do with communication. You need to have a slick, modern communications presence across social media, as much as it's something that it is a little vile. And personally, I'm not on social media, but it is something that most people do use, and it is something that will get you a lot of traction. It is also relatively cheap to advertise on social media, and it is relatively cheap to put together static tiles or videos that you can target on social media. So if you can find a graphic designer within your group, if you're a rank and file ticket, or if you have an extended friend or partner or family member who is a graphic designer, I would absolutely draw them into the campaign.
Okay, thanks, Mitch. So final question. There's a couple bits to it. When does the voting actually start? And if people want to get involved, how can they get involved? And any final comments that you might have?
So the AEC will send out ballots next Tuesday, the 10th of June. We anticipate those will reach people's mailboxes by Thursday, Friday, if not earlier the following week. If you would like to get in touch with the campaign, you can go to our website, which is www.avfm.au. And that has links to our social media. It also has our email address and the phone numbers of myself and Giselle, if you would like to get in touch directly, and we encourage you to do so if you want to get involved in the campaign deeper. And any final remarks, I would just say that win, lose or draw, which has been our slogan, we have already shifted the dial so far in terms of a reinvigorated public sector union. We're very proud of that effort, and we hope, regardless of the outcome of the election, to continue that work.
Excellent, and good on you. Sounds like you've been doing great, great union work.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Yeah, thanks, Mitch, and all the solidarity with your campaign, and yeah, hope you do really well.
Thanks very much, Jacob. Thanks for having me this morning.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. All right, so we're just speaking to Mitch from A Voice for Members, and which is the rank and file CPSU Victoria ticket that is currently challenging the incumbent leadership, which actually has been in power for like unopposed for like 35 years, which I think is sort of quite remarkable in a lot of ways. And sort of like, in some ways, it's sort of...
Well, there's other leaderships in the union movement that have been in power for a long, long time.
Yeah. And it's sort of like this whole thing about union bureaucracies where it's sort of like, yeah, it's almost like it becomes this sort of entrenched job that you're just expected to, yeah, that's just... gives a sort, almost like in a sense, it's, yeah, you basically become part of an entrenched kind of bureaucracy when that shouldn't be, you know, that shouldn't be what unions should be. They should be democratic institutions that are developing new leadership every year.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm just going to go play a quick few announcements. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
CR is a community radio license holder. What you hear on community radio is governed by the Community Radio Codes of Practice. The Codes of Practice cover matters relating to program content, including local content, news, current affairs, Australian music content, programs for children, and the responsibilities associated with broadcasting by and for the community. They also cover aspects such as community access and participation in how 3CR operates. Copies of the codes are available from our website. Go to 3cr.org.au/who-we-are.
Hi, listeners. This is 3CR, and this is you're listening to the Green Left Friday Morning Breakfast Show. So welcome. And we're about to tell you a whole heap of events that are happening around Melbourne. So the first one that I would like to draw your attention to is Friday, June the 6th rally. Today's June the 6th, isn't it? No?
Yeah, it's today.
Okay, I've lost track of time. So this is happening today, 5:30 at Parliament House, and it's Justice for Kumanjaya White. Since 1991, 595 First Nations people have died in custody, nearly 600 in other words. This year alone, there have been 10 deaths in custody. So this is a really important rally, as I said, at Parliament House, 5:30 today.
All right. And now the next events that are coming up is there's going to be a fundraiser on Saturday at 3pm, Get Loud for Gaza. And that's going to be happening on Saturday, June the 7th at 3pm at the Eltham Community and Reception Centre, 801 Main Road in Eltham. On Sunday, there will be important rally for Palestine at 12pm at the State Library. And now this is going to be an important one because it's very much going to be... Yeah, it's very much being built as a major Palestine rally that everyone should get up to. And they're encouraging people who are coming to the rally to wear red to kind of mark the kind of red line that we basically argue that Israel has essentially crossed.
Yeah.
And then on Friday the 13th of June, there's going to be a free Palestine rally organised by Mary Beck for Palestine and Students for Palestine at 6pm outside Peter Khalil's office in Coburg. And then on Saturday, June the 14th, there's going to be a film screening, Palestinians Don't Need Sidewalks, and that's going to be at the Mount View Uniting Church, 559-661 Whitehorse Road in Mitcham. And then until Friday, July 20th, there's going to be a Black Injustice, Incarceration and Resilience Hyde Museum of Modern Art at 7 Templestowe Road in Bullen. And then on Saturday, June the 28th, there's going to be a rally, Sydney Roads Accessible Tram Stop, second anniversary, and that's going to be happening at 11am at the Coburg Mall, outside Library, Victoria Street and Louisa Street, Coburg. And then from September 5th to the 7th, there's going to be the Eco-Socialism Conference with the theme Eco-Socialism, Not Barbarism, and that's going to be at the Ballinballin Place at 15 Phoenix Street in Brunswick. And then also want to make a plug for Rising Tide, which is going to be happening from Thursday, November 27th to Tuesday, December the 2nd. And join the NAM contingent for the People's Blockade of the world's largest coal port. All right. Well, that's pretty much all the kind of events, I think. There might be more events that we might miss, but we'll try and cover them for next Friday's program. And you can always look on greenleft.org.au/events to find out more information. Anyway, I thought that we could maybe we can use the opportunity to actually play play a song. So I was thinking I would, let's see. Oh, yeah, I'll play Thursday by Asubi Seksu. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
This June will be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
I want to hear what you've got to say. I want to hear.
It's your station, your voice. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR Radiothon 2025. Your station, your voice.
What you've got to say, hey, hey.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible. To donate, call 03 94 19 8377 or go online at 3cr.org.au. 3CR, your station, your voice.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Arnica Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. You're just listening to Thursday by Asubi Seksu. And I just wanted to, we just tried getting on to Sam Rainwhite, and unfortunately we haven't been able to get on to him.
He's slept in, Jacob.
Possibly, yeah. Now, in the kind of meantime, there is actually a number of news stories I can, there's one news story I'll actually kind of talk about. And maybe we can just play another song, because we actually discussed quite a lot of things in our program this week. So just one thing I'd like to talk about is, and this has been reported and written about in Green Left, but over the weekend, I actually had the pleasure of attending the Activism for Palestine conference from May 30th to June 1, which happened in Meagandjin, Brisbane, and it was, I think it was very much a very kind of impressive effort from Justice for Palestine Meagandjin. Close to 200 people attended the conference, and included people from Western Australia, Northern Territory, Tasmania, Victoria, regional Queensland, and New South Wales. So one of the things as well was that, you know, the conference very much kind of went through the discussions on how we can build a kind of stronger Palestine movement, while also reflecting about on, you know, some of the politics of the Palestine movement, etc. And to, you know, capturing kind of like the opening of opening night of the conference, which featured Palestinian academic Lana Tutur, Aboriginal journalist Amy McGuire, and Justice for Palestine activist Jamil Nabalusi and Rima Naji, you know, spoke at the opening public meeting and then then said that it's crucial that we resist and resist with all means at our disposal. And, you know, even though no action feels enough in the face of the scale of this violence.
So what were some of the ideas for how to build the movement?
So some of the ideas that sort of came out is we very much, there was panels on Zionist settler colonialism, so looking at the ideas of settler colonialism. There was also looking at Wabit, which is known as an Arabic term around the fundamentals of the Palestine Liberation Movement. There was also a bit of reflection on the experiences of Rima Naji's campaign for the seat of Moreton. Rima ran for the Greens as a Palestinian activist. And also there was also discussions around building solidarity in the union movement and student movement, among others. There was also another very good workshop, which In fact, I might start a bit of discussion about this, but there was a very good workshop that I attended that was basically about the importance of the mass protest movement, because I think one challenging discussion we're sort of having the Palestine movement is, you know, some people kind of feel that, you know, we've kind of protested enough and, you know, we need to have like a kind of new kind of strategy. And I think one of the things about this workshop is it very much affirmed the importance of continuously organizing mass protests. And, you know, in a sense, it wasn't dismissing the other actions that people are gonna take, which is like including direct action, etc. But it did go into the important thing that, you know, we need to keep mobilizing for Palestine. And I guess my personal opinion as well is, you know, I think it would be a mistake to dismiss the value of protests because, okay, while protests, you know, while protests have not stopped the genocide in Gaza, there's really nothing else we can do other than continuously mobilizing and continue to protest in the face of such injustice. Because at the end of the day, if there were no protests kind of happening, and I kind of made this point in the workshop, the world would look like a much crueler place. It would actually indicate that there's no opposition to this onslaught of violence that is happening in the world.
Yep.
And also the other thing as well is, you know, the Palestinians themselves, they are protesting every day. In a sense, in the West Bank, they're Palestinians coming together to stand up against the Israeli settlers. They're Palestinians coming together to protest against the Israel occupation forces. You know, and they're, in a sense, they're Palestinians resisting the occupation in Gaza right now, you know, through political organizations and so on. So I think, you know, I think the importance of protest cannot really be kind of overstated.
Well, if I could just add to that, you know, I remember as a teenager watching the news during the Vietnam moratoriums, and that would then prompt me to try and find out more about why are these people out in the streets? What's this issue about? So protests help to spread the message, to inform people, to inspire people, and I think it's a way of building the movement because if you're inspired by these protests, then you're more likely to become involved. I think with the issue of Palestine, there are heaps and heaps of Australians who are absolutely disgusted by what they see, but despairing. And I think a lot of people feel powerless. So when they see a powerful protest movement that they can join, I think that's a really important element to drawing more people in. It's a way of reaching out. I think ultimately attracting more people. And that's what we need if we're going to have any kind of impact on what's happening. And in some ways, you know, I think if we didn't have these protest movements, I know it's hard to imagine how it could get worse in Gaza, but I think it could be worse if there weren't these protest movements happening at the moment. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, yeah, it's hard to kind of measure that. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, you know, the thing about the Palestine Solidarity Movement is it's coming up against the whole system of capitalism. Mm-hmm. And I think it is quite naive to think that, you know, if we got hundreds of thousands of people on the streets that you can just basically completely challenge that entrenched power overnight. But the only way the entrenched power of capital is going to be challenged is it's going to start with protests of ordinary people, and it's also going to come from workers taking direct action against the system. And there's no alternative other than our own organization and, you know, our ability to organize and our ability to mobilize. So I think that's where we have to take into account the hope that we can stop this genocide.
And I think the thing that a lot of politicians and the ruling class are afraid of is that these protests and these campaigns actually expose the capitalist system for what it is. They don't want their system exposed. They want the majority of ordinary people to keep believing in it and being passive participants in it. So if this movement begins to open people's eyes, that's a real danger to them.
Yeah.
And that was one of the impacts of the Vietnam moratorium. It radicalized so many people and spurred other movements like the Women's Liberation Movement, the Gay Liberation Movement, the Indigenous Movement, and so forth. So I think that's their fear, and that's why they're also trying to silence us. And ultimately, they would love to stop the rallies happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one last thing I'll just, a few other things I'll kind of end on as well is, you know, one of the other things that happened at the protest as well, at the conference as well, was there was actually an action called on the Saturday night, outside the Wickham Hotel, which is a very popular pub in Brisbane, and in fact it's known as like an LGBT, a pro LGBT kind of space. And basically, the Zionist Council Federation of Queensland basically held an event at the Wickham Hotel, and many of the staff and performers at Wickham had actually asked for the event to be cancelled, but the hotel owners had refused. Now, as someone who actually attended that the protest and knew a bit more extra information, you know, actually one outrageous thing is the owners, I get a sense that the owners actually did want to cancel the event, but the Zionist Council of Victoria basically asserted their, in a sense, so-called legal right, including threatening damages to the hotel if they went all the way with cancelling the event altogether. But I think the positive things that ended up happening is the event didn't really go anywhere because there wasn't actually enough staff for them to really hold the event.
Great.
And there was also, we also organised a protest outside the Wickham Hotel, protesting against the Zionists. And it was a peaceful protest. We didn't have any direct confrontation with the Zionists, although we did sort of, you know, shame them as they walked in. But one of the interesting things was, a lot of the staff who were already working there were very supportive of the protests. And in fact, I had a conversation with the security guard and said, oh, I wonder if they've cancelled the event because of our presence. And he was like, yeah, I hope so. So I think what the event kind of showed is, I think it really showed the kind of importance of workers' solidarity and the fact that actually a lot of people really do care about this. People are not silent and complicit about this genocide going on.
Yeah.
And one thing I'll just say that's not really noted in the Green Left article is there's been this sort of outrageous establishment backlash where they're basically trying to make out that this protest outside the Wickham Hotel was like an act of anti-Semitism and that we're simply targeting the event because Jewish people were gathering, when it was completely false. They were targeted because it represents the Zionist Council of Queensland, who are openly supporting the genocide, but also supporting the occupation and the settler colonial kind of project of Israel.
And they always ignore the fact that there are so many Jewish people who are totally on side with the Palestine movement and with the protests that are organised.
Yeah. And in fact, yeah, there were a number of anti-Zionist Jews that were at the protest. Mm. So, yeah, I think it was a thing. Now, just to end on a few other things on the report. So another few things that happened at the conference was on the Sunday, we kind of talked about the kind of practical activities that we need to do to help end the genocide and win a free Palestine. So we had the workshops on the Boycott Caltex campaign, the union, discussing the union action against the Zim shipping line. And of course, we also talked about direct action and campaigning to get superannuation companies to divest from Israeli companies. Now, probably one thing about the conference I'd say is, you know, there were not necessarily any formal decisions were made, but there was recognition that stronger national coordination would help the movement win some of its direct aims. And there was also a post-conference meeting of direct action campaigners discussing forming a national network to target the weapons industry. So, yeah, overall, I think it was a very good conference. And yeah, I'm definitely glad I got a chance to kind of attend.
Sounds like it was excellent.
Yeah. All right. Now, maybe we'll kind of, I'll just go play a quick announcement and then we'll go finish up the program. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
we're not meant to have anything nuclear in our country.
It's really important and urgent that, Australia get serious about nuclear disarmament.
Well, nobody anywhere on the planet has figured out how to deal with highly radioactive waste.
Most of those who've managed nuclear weapons consider this to be the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, with the danger of nuclear war at unprecedented levels.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're getting into the end of the program. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in this week. And I also might make another plug that it's the Radiothon this month. And there'll be a range of Radiothon will be actually happening all week next week from Monday. And the Green Left Radio program will be having its Radiothon program next Friday. So I'd like to kind of make a plug to actually support Green Left Radio. If you've enjoyed the content that we have offered compared to the other 3CR programs, when it comes to making your Radiothon donation, I'd like to make the case for you to nominate Green Left Radio as your kind of show.
But it's not a competition.
But Mary said, it's not a competition. If you happen to like other shows better than Green Left Radio, yeah, nominate those ones too. Because
all the money
we're raising money collectively, and we're trying to get to a target of $270,000.
For 3CR.
For 3CR.
Yeah. But it would be great if we got even more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And also the last thing I'll just sort of make is, I mean, if you Green Left is the affiliate of the program Green Left Radio, and, you know, Green Left has been around for 30 years, you know, bringing you the 34 years, bringing you stories of the front line of, you know, climate justice, workers' rights, and other kind of social justice issues. But Green Left needs needs supporters to keep the project afloat. So yeah, if you enjoy our program, consider becoming a Green Left supporter by going on greenleft.org.au/support. But yeah, like to thank our listeners and our guests for being on the program.
Yep. So that's Mitch and Rachel.
Rachel, yeah. And apologies that we couldn't get Sam on the line.
Yep. So goodbye, everyone, for Friday, the 6th of June.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1-800-634-206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions, serve all masses,
arise!
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back. Reds underneath your beds in that crack.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.